You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today is the conclusion of a three-part series entitled An American Renaissance, The Road to Peace and Prosperity, Faith, Family, Friends, and Freedom First. Now, I want to caution you, I'm going to provide you a brief summary of parts one and two, but I can't go over that material again, so it's going to be a summary. And although these shows are independent, the best way to listen to this show is to start with part one, then go to part two, and go to part three. And furthermore, the reason I'm doing this three-part show is prior to this, I did another three-part show, and the reason I did it is more and more Americans, and the majority of Americans, believe the country is going in the wrong direction. And I agree with that. But they also are abandoning both the Republican and the Democratic parties. Because if you ask them their party affiliation, and Gallup has been running this poll for many, many years, they will say they're independents. And it's right today, it's between about 40% and 50% consider themselves independents. It depends when you do the poll. The Gallup poll has got as high as 47, but it has been running in the low 40s, and I expect that to go over 50%, probably within the next 5 to 10 years at the most. I actually think it could go a lot sooner, depending on what happens in Washington. Because the problem, ladies and gentlemen, in Washington, and the reason why the people are waking up to it and leaving both parties, they feel they've been lied to, they feel they've been misled, and they truly believe that government spending is out of control. That is the central economic problem today. The federal government is simply too big, and it's growing, and it will grow even bigger. It gets a lot worse, and that's just the federal government. On top of that, you have to add local, both city, county, state. And when you do that, the size of the government today, depending on which state you're in, is approaching 50%. That's more than the serfs had to pay their lords when they were in serfdom. We're on the road to serfdom. Matter of fact, we're a long way on that road to serfdom, and we have to change direction. We have to change direction. And that's what the American people are saying. Now, I made a point, and I'll emphasize this again. I'm a classical liberal. That's my political philosophy. The best way to summarize that is I'm for limited government and a constitutional republic, very much like the founding fathers designed it. We don't have that today. For large areas of the federal government, they have totally ignored the Constitution. We have federal departments that the founders would never have dreamed of, and even if they did, they would say it's not the responsibility of government at any level, and certainly not at the federal level. Now, I'll summarize parts one and two. Part one, I address what needs to be done in terms of tax revenues. The biggest criticism of the federal income tax system is it's way too complicated. No one really understands it. There are over 70,000 pages of both regulations and the code itself. Ask any CPA, and he usually will have on his bookshelf copies of it. I know when I was in financial planning, I did. They're thick volumes, several of them. And I used it as a reference. Do you think anyone really understands the entire code? They don't. And neither does the IRS, if you've ever tried to ask questions. So we have a system that is, in terms of taxes, is what I call a legacy system. We've had it for 100 years, and the system has got worse every year it's been in existence. Yes, we've had rates both go up and down, but largely the trend is up. And we've had more and more federal taxes. So we have a tax system that is a great burden to the American citizens, because ultimately it is the American citizen that pays for it. And what the American people are crying out is to the government, please leave us alone. Let us keep our money. But what the federal government has done, both parties are guilty of this, is engage in what I call Santa Claus socialism. Vote for me and I'll give you a benefit. Both parties are guilty of this. And as a result, both welfare programs and entitlement programs have got bigger and bigger and bigger. And in the last show, I went over the major categories of spending, and they're eye-popping. In terms of entitlements, the biggest one is Social Security and Medicare. And you can see it. I have a chart, and I'm scrolling down. And before I forget, for new listeners, the way you listen to this show is to go to prompopops.wordpress.com. That's my companion blog. At the very top, you'll have links to my most recent shows, 60 to 80 shows. But below that, and this is the reason I'm pointing out, you'll have a lot of information. And this three-part series has a lot of information. Now, I know many of you simply don't have the time to go through all the articles, videos, charts that I make available. I make this available because this is some of the information, certainly not all the information, that I have looked at either recently or in the past, and it's useful for the topic I'm discussing or the news story I'm discussing. Normally, I have commentary or my opinions on breaking news stories. I started out on this series because I was listening to both the Democrat and the Republican candidates for president. And there are many in the Republican Party, as a matter of fact, too many. And what I was not seeing is some bold ideas that would change the direction. Now, they all want to be president. I understand that. And some are more qualified than others. We have governors. We have senators. We have business people. But do we have deep thinkers? Do we have people that really have spent a lot of time thinking about what's wrong and what needs to be done? And even if they have, are they being bold in saying what they're for? And what I was coming to the conclusion is two things. One, I don't know what the Republican Party stands for. And these people are all over the lot on both domestic and foreign affairs. And many of them are, to cut to the chase, government interventionists. In other words, they want to grow the government. Now, many or most of them will say they're conservatives. Some will say they're libertarians. But are they fiscal responsible, and will they do the heavy lifting? Will they actually go to Washington and first reform the tax system? And I went over that in part one of this series, namely replace the all federal income taxes, that's my recommendation, with a broad-based consumption tax, such as either the fair tax or my slight modification of that program, what I call fair tax less. Now, let me speak a minute for what I'm recommending. We eliminate all federal taxes, or we replace all federal taxes by eliminating them and replace it with one single tax that everybody pays. And everybody knows what the rate is. And the rate is 20%. Is that in concrete? No. I hope it actually goes lower over time, and it should go over time. Now, that's in contrast with the 23% rate of the fair tax. So mine is slightly lower, and it's intentionally slightly lower. It makes the argument simpler, but more importantly, when you're dealing with a situation where government spending is out of control, and it is out of control, we need to cut spending. So the fair tax is based on the assumption that it's revenue neutral. In other words, it will collect the same amount of taxes as the existing personal income tax system is based. We have a system today, it's based on the income either you earn or corporations earn. So you have personal and corporate income taxes, you have capital gains taxes, alternate minimum taxes, as well as estate and gift taxes. And that's what the fair tax would replace. Mine is slightly different. It would replace all federal taxes. In other words, everyone in the country would understand that everyone is paying a tax of 20% on what they spend, consumption. That's another way of saying spending, consumption, for new goods and services. And I always have to quickly make two points. This is, first of all, first and foremost, will replace all those taxes. It's not an additional tax. And secondly, most people really haven't thought about it, but if you think about it, for example, when you buy a loaf of bread for a dollar, embedded in that price of a dollar for the loaf of bread today is about 23 cents of the dollar is for both payroll taxes for Social Security, Medicare, disability, unemployment, as well as income taxes and estate taxes. When we replace or eliminate all those other taxes, the government still has to pay its bills. It needs to collect tax revenue, so it will be collecting it, or better, more precisely, the retailers, when you go to the checkout counter. For example, today if I go to the checkout counter with a loaf of bread, I pay a dollar. With the fair tax or with the fair tax less, I would still pay the dollar. Nothing has changed as regard to the price, but here's the difference. Because neither you nor the businesses are paying either income taxes or payroll taxes or gift or estate taxes or capital gains taxes, all that's eliminated, your gross paycheck is going to be your net paycheck. So you're going to have more money to spend, and you will spend the money, but the tax will be collected as you spend your money. So it simplifies the tax system. It does away with the entire revenue code and regulation. It does away with the IRS. You simply don't need thousands of bureaucrats processing your tax returns. There will be no more tax returns. And you decide when you're going to pay the taxes. So that's how it works. One of the key things, the criticism, and really that a way that answers this criticism, both of the fair tax and my fair tax less, is everyone, besides knowing what the tax rate is and have to pay it, will get what's called a tax prebate every month from the federal government. Every adult will get a $1,000 check every month from the federal government when they're 18, starting when they're 18. Now, they get that prebate for a reason. The criticism is, if you don't have that prebate, that a sales tax, or for that matter, the Social Security taxes that we have now, are regressive. It hits those that are low income the heaviest. However, with everyone getting the prebate, including those that either have no income or low income, it eliminates for your early expenditures, because the prebate will pay the taxes for up to $60,000 of spending. In other words, if you multiply $60,000 by 20%, if you spend $60,000, you will pay 20%. It's in the price of that loaf of bread. It's not an add-on to what you buy, but it's already in the price that you're paying. So if you spend let's say an extreme case, you bought 60,000 $1 loaves of bread. That's a lot of bread. But your tax on that would be $12,000. Well, over the year, you would get $1,000 a month for 12 months is $12,000. So in essence, you're not paying anything in taxes because you're getting at the very first of the month that prebate. Everyone from the poorest to the richest will get the prebate. It's fair. It's simple. It's fair. It's easy to understand. It's transparent. Everyone knows what the tax is. They know what the prebate is. And it's efficient. You're not wasting a lot of your time or paying a lot of your money to get your tax returns completed, because you won't be doing that. Now, I need to point out that this is the first step, is to first pass into law the Fair Tax Less program. It will collect slightly less than the tax revenues that are collected now, but there's an important big difference. What is very, very stable? It's consumption spending. It's more stable in income, because many people, for example, in the last recession, got laid off. They had no income coming in, so they weren't paying income taxes, nor were they paying payroll taxes. Were they spending? You better believe they were spending. They were spending on the essentials of life, for example, food, clothing, rent or mortgage payments, car payments, insurance payments. And that's what that prebate is for, to cover the essentials of life. Now, if you're making a lot of money, what are you doing? You're spending a lot of money. So for those that have a good-paying job, or let's say they're married, a couple both working, they're going to pay 20% on what they spend. And like I say, you determine when you want to pay it. So when you want to consume or spend your money, you're going to be paying the taxes. And the retailer will send the money to the state, just like they do state sales taxes today, and the state will turn around and send it to the federal government. You will not need a giant bureaucracy, the Internal Revenue Service. The staff can be cut down to a fraction of what it is, because you're not dealing with the code, you're not dealing with the returns, and you save and the businesses save because of the compliance cost, the cost of preparing those returns, which is typically somewhere in the order between $300 and $500 billion every year. all that's eliminated. Your gross paycheck will be your paycheck. No more deductions for Social Security or the taxes that you withhold. Okay, that's a summary of part one. The big advantage of doing that, and the reason why I lead off with that, and I'll connect it to part two, is whatever is collected. Let's say the system went into effect 1 January, or let's say it starts 1 January of next year. And over a 12-month period, they collect $3 trillion in taxes. That's just an estimate. Then our Congress would be limited. And this is how we're going to control what they spend. They can spend up to 90% of what's collected. So in the next fiscal year, there'll be a cap on spending. It'll be 90% of what they collected the prior year. And the other 10% will go to pay down the debt as well as the unfunded liabilities. So the split is 90-10. Whatever you collect and bring in revenues, you can only spend up to, that's the ceiling, 90% of it. No more borrowing. We're trying to gradually, over many, many years, pay down the debt. And once that's done, pay down the unfunded liabilities. Now, to put it in scope, our gross debt today is over $18 trillion. Our unfunded liabilities is over $100 trillion. So it's going to take a long time to pay it down, but you have to start somewhere. And you start by two things. Telling Congress the most you can spend is 90% of what's collected. The other 10% pays down the debt, and you're going to have to pay interest on the existing debt. I need to emphasize that. And that puts a ceiling on it, and that means every budget from here on out will not only balance, but will be in surplus because your spending will be limited to 90% of what you collect. That's key. You see, the problem is the key problem that needs to be addressed is out-of-control government spending. You need to force Congress, your representatives, to live within the means of the American people. Because right now, they're not. And you can see that in two areas. Every year, we've been running these huge deficits, whether it's Republicans or Democrats. And I need to emphasize this. One reason I've given up on the Republican Party is they were not fiscally responsible. They had a great opportunity to start paying down the debt, and they blew it. Now, I know some of you are going to say, well, 9-1-1 happened. Yes, 9-1-1 happened, and we had a war. And yes, some of the increase in spending is in that area. Undeniable. And that's one of the problems with wars. When you go to war, invariably what happens, government spending is going to go up dramatically. So you have to limit Congress as to what it can spend. Now, Congress will have the tough job of setting priorities, and the American people will tell them what their priorities are. Defense, Social Security, Medicare, interest on the national debt. I think that will get the most votes. But you see, once this tax system is in place, the American people will not want to go back to the old system. And as a matter of fact, I predict any politician that tries will be defeated. They will like the new system. They'll get behind the new system. And once the fair tax less system is in place and the people like it and won't go back, then that's the time you start the process of amending the Constitution by repealing the income tax amendment. And that will take probably 7 years. I don't know how long it's going to take. I think more people behind the fair tax, it's going to be quicker, but you need to first reform the taxes, and in the process, you're putting a cap on government spending, both mandatory and discretionary spending. And what Congress means by that, they've broken spending up into two major categories. Mandatory spending is, as the word suggests, for example, let's say you qualify for Social Security and Medicare. Those are considered entitlement programs. So if you qualify for those programs, you're going to get benefits. You're going to get a check, a Social Security check. And let's say you have some doctor bills, you present them, and then Medicare will pay some of those doctor or hospital bills. You're entitled to it because Congress has set up the program. It's pay as you go. And under the previous system, you would have paid payroll taxes as you were working. Those are going away. They are going away. It doesn't mean Social Security is going away or Medicare is going away because the fair tax or the fair tax less, part of those receipts will go to pay for the benefits. But it's mandatory because as people qualify for these benefits, then the government is authorized to pay the benefits out of revenues from the Treasury that go to the Treasury as all your retailers of new goods and services collect the tax, they forward it to the state, they get a small fee, the state gets a small fee for collecting it, and the net proceeds go to the federal government to pay all its bills. And we're forcing on Congress the discipline, and that's what we're talking about, of fiscal responsibility. It's better than the balanced budget because you can only spend 90%, and the other 10% will, over time, pay off first the national debt, and that will take a long time. It's not going to happen overnight. And then once the national debt is paid off, then we can gradually pay down those unfunded liabilities. And those are largely for Social Security and Medicare, because those programs will run into trouble. Medicare is already in trouble. It runs deficits every year. And now Social Security is starting. But those benefits have to be paid. That's why they're mandatory. What's discretionary is most of the other federal departments. In other words, they have the discretion to set how much each department can spend. And what I'm recommending is we're putting a budgetary constraint on how much Congress in total can spend. And they're going to have to listen to the American people. They're going to have to listen when they go back to their districts and get a sense of what the people support and what the people don't support or needs to be cut. I gave you my opinion. I think if you talk to most Americans, they would say, okay, national defense is important. Yes. Medicare is important. Yes. Social Security is important. Yes. We need a Treasury Department to collect the money. Yes. We need a Justice Department to enforce the laws. We need a State Department to deal with foreign nations. We need a Defense Department to defend us. Those are the biggies. Those are top priorities. And what's left over is left over and has to be allocated amongst the various departments. Now, what is going to have to happen? Several things have to happen. And Congress is going to have to do this, getting input from the people. I'm not dictating this. It's up to Congress to do this. My point, and I always emphasize this, is neither the Democratic Party nor the Republican Party will do this. They simply won't. They don't have the courage to do it. They don't have the will to do it. And frankly, they don't have the vision to do it. It will be done one way or the other, because if we don't start to take immediate corrective action, we will face an immense financial crisis as more and more of the baby boom generation, those born between 1946 and 1964, retire and start to collect Social Security and Medicare benefits. And that's happening. The statistic I've seen, I can't verify this, is about 10,000 people every day begin to collect. In other words, they qualify for both Medicare and Social Security benefits. And we have about 65 million people, actually slightly less than 65 million people, that are born in that baby boom generation. That is the big, let's say, challenge. Initially, the baby boom generation started with about 77 million, but people die. And people will die. Eventually, the entire baby boom generation will die over time. But it's going to take a lot of time. It's going to take at least 30 years. And you need to think in those terms. You need to think long term. And people are living longer and longer. For example, in 1900, the life expectancy was 47 years. Today, it's 77 years. In other words, we've had an increase of 30 years. That's both men and women. Women actually live longer. So as we have advances in medical technologies, as people take care of themselves, people are living longer. And that's part of the problem. Because Social Security was passed in 1935 under Roosevelt. At that time, very few people live to 65. So the benefits didn't start to 65, and the expectation was that, yes, some people will reach 65, but there'll be more than enough money. Well, what happened over the last 70, 80 years, technology has advanced, medicine has advanced, and as a result of that, people that in previous decades would not have lived are living, and they're living a lot longer. That's the big driver. The big money is in the entitlement area, both Social Security and Medicare, and Congress is going to have to make changes to those programs. That's the reality. Now, a lot of people will object to that, but here's the key point. If you don't do anything, eventually you're going to be forced to make radical changes that no one will like. So the responsible thing to do is be very deliberate about this, consider the will of the American people, and start doing the difficult task of first changing the tax system, changing the budget levels, and they need to be reduced. I mean real cuts. We're talking real cuts here. That's why in the last show I said get rid of the baseline budgeting. It gives a bias towards more and more government. I don't have time to get into that, but the way it works now, whatever the department has, for example, this year, next year they're going to get that plus a percentage, and that biases to higher and higher spending. We haven't really had spending cuts. What we've had is cuts in the rate of growth. And what they argue about, should we increase it 10%, 7%, 5%? They're not cutting it. They're just cutting what the growth rate will be. So you need to get rid of completely baseline budgeting, go to zero-based budgeting, where the departments have to justify their budgets every single year from the ground up, In other words, you're going to have to justify everything in your budget, just like any family has to do every month, every business, every charity, every city, college, state, school district, county and state. You got to balance your budget and you got to make choices. Some of them are difficult choices, both in terms of operational or daily expenses as well as capital expenditures or investments. An example for a new car or house, probably the major capital investments of most people. So all that needs to be done. Now, part three is, in some ways it's easy, in some way it's sort of mission impossible. As I alluded to in the past, towards the end of the last show, the federal government, in turn, no matter how you really look at it, whether it's number of departments, number of agencies, number of regulations, they've all gone up, up, and up, as well as number of employees and what their compensation is. That is part of the problem. Now, most of that is what's called discretionary spending. And that is a small portion of total spending. And I know the temptation is to let's just downsize the federal government, downsize the department's budgets. Ladies and gentlemen, we're desperate. We need to really scrub and eliminate, and I mean eliminate, not downsize, permanently close, not a temporary shutdown, not a 5 or 10% budgetary cut. I'm talking close down permanently federal departments. Now, you'll get a large debate on which ones and the total number of departments. My own opinion is 8 to 10 departments need to be completely shut down. Most of those departments are handing out subsidies. In other words, they're doing what economists would call transfer payments, taking money from the taxpayer and giving it to other people. That's a lot of what's going on. They also are making regulation after regulation for the various programs that they pass. Now, one approach, which I frankly don't think gets you anywhere, is to gradually cut the budgets of these departments. The problem is both the bureaucracy in Washington, D.C., as well as the Congress itself, have a vested interest of keeping those departments, as well as the committees that have not only oversight responsibilities, but more importantly, appropriate money for these departments to keep those committees as well as departments in existence. And you also have people outside the government that get the subsidies or get the changes in the regulation or the tax code that will also fight this. Remember, I'm not saying this is easy, and I am saying it's nothing really is going to change whether you vote Democrat or Republican, because it hasn't. Look at the overwhelming trend, really starting dramatically in the 30s, but it really started a little earlier than that. Government, the federal government, has simply gotten bigger and bigger under both Republicans and Democrats. Yes, we've had periods of much higher spending and then lower spending, but we have an emergency here. We have a crisis here, and we keep going the wrong way. And we keep going the wrong way because neither political party has the ability. And what I mean by that, they don't have the willingness or the courage or the wisdom to change directions. And they keep The phrase I hate is kicking the can down the road, which means they won't do their jobs. We pay our representatives, whether in the House or the Senate, to look out for the general welfare and common defense of the American people. It wasn't designed to hand out subsidies or welfare, take money from one group using coercion, namely the tax system, and give it to another group, or what I call theft by government. It's like your neighbor coming over with, if your neighbor comes over with a gun and says, give me $1,000, I need money to pay my rent and buy some groceries, he's going to be arrested. He's committing a crime. But if the government does it, it's okay. No, it's not okay. And that's the problem. We have a professional career class, political class, both in the Democrat and the Republican Party. And that's what they're about. That's why I say they're bordering on, some would say they already are, a criminal class. They're using the government to take money from one person and give it to another person. What we need is a much smaller government. How small? Eventually, if we pass the fair tax less, limit the federal government what it can pay or spend every year, fiscal year. Over time, what's going to happen? First of all, and this is very, very important, if we had a fair tax less system as well as this budgetary limit, namely 90% of what you collected past the last year, with the remaining going to paying down the debt, what does that do? It increases certainty. Everyone will know what the tax system is. Everyone. Not hard to understand. You're going to have to pay 20% on any new good or service that you buy. It's included in the price. You can back it out, but it will be included in the price as 20% of the dollar you're paying is going to be going to the federal government. And that's how the government is paid for, because you're no longer paying income taxes. Your businesses, employers are not paying income taxes. They're not paying payroll taxes. All existing federal taxes are eliminated and then replaced by this broad-based consumption tax. And it could be the fair tax, but I think the fair tax less is a better system, because we have to actually cut, and I mean real cuts, the U.S. federal budget. And one way to do it, and there are many ways to do this, but I think the preferred way and the fast way, and it's going to be difficult for people, especially if you're a bureaucrat, if your department is eliminated. Now, some of the departments that need to be eliminated are agriculture, commerce, labor, energy, education, interior, transportation, housing and urban development, just to name a few. Now, I need to point out two things. There are probably in the departments that will be shut down, maybe a program that we need to keep. Let me give you an example. Two of the departments, actually several departments, but there are two departments, namely the Department of Commerce and the Department of Labor, that provide a lot of economic information in terms of statistics every month, including the unemployment rate, how the economy has been doing in terms of real GDP or gross domestic product. What I recommend is you combine into an office all the statistical information that the government publishes, but what we need to do before we do that is really scrub and eliminate reports that people aren't using. I agree that there's a lot of economic information that, for example, the Department of Labor, especially the Bureau of Labor Statistics, as well as Department of Commerce, Bureau of Economic Analysis, puts out that are useful and probably should continue. And I think what you're going to find when you eliminate departments, you are going to find a few areas, and I mean a very few, that you need to keep. In other words, they justify the government spending money on them. But most of the department expenditures will be eliminated. And many of them are largely subsidies or tax relief, or they put out regulations. So when you eliminate 8 to 10 departments, you're cutting spending, but you're also, and this is very important, you're eliminating regulations. If you don't have the department to regulate, they can't regulate. And regulation has got out of control. I've emphasized taxes, but an equal burden on the economy is regulation. So the third part of what I'm recommending, and there's really another part, but I don't have time to get into it, is we have to eliminate departments with the goal of cutting spending. We have to reform the entitlement programs as well as the welfare programs, many of which are duplicate. They duplicate each other, and they need to be eliminated. And if we do this, And Congress is going to have to do this. Our representatives need to do this. It's going to be heavy lifting. It's going to be a difficult job. And unfortunately, neither the Democrats or the Republicans are up to the job because they don't want to do it. Their heart is in growing government. And that's what they've been doing for decades. They've added department after department, agencies after agencies, regulation upon regulation, taxes upon taxes. And then they're scratching their head and wondering why the economy is growing less than 3%. And 3%, there's no magic about that. But historically, that's what the economy is grown at over about a 50-year period. We're never going to get back to full employment where all Americans can work. We currently have between 20 and 30 million people. That's a lot of people. That's almost 10% of the entire population, and it is about 20% of the workforce that either is unemployed or underemployed or they're discouraged. They can't find a job. The problem, ladies and gentlemen, is big government. Big government is not the solution. And until we get a political party that, first of all, is fundamentally supporting a constitutional republic, a limited government, in other words, its principle, those are the principles, and we elect candidates that know if they're going to run for either Congress or the Senate, they're going to have to make tough decisions. They're going to, first of all, have to start listening to the American people, not ignoring them, listening, because they're going to have to eliminate subsidies, transfer payments, and dozens of programs, as well as eliminate entire departments, because the day of reckoning is going to happen. So either you do this now or over the coming years, or someday the United States, it will crash. Now, we're already broke. We're spending more money than we take in, and we're burdening future generations. We're burdening people today, but we're also burdening future generations. That's how bad it is. And I'm not seeing leadership out of the Democratic Party. I think they're a lost cause, nor for that matter the Republican Party. Many of them talk a good game, have the answers down, are smooth or slick, but they don't have solutions. They're not addressing the problems, and they're not doing it in a timely way. We need fundamental tax reform. And what I mean by that is the elimination of a tax system that's legacy. It's outdated. The income tax was a bad idea, and it's had its run, and we need to switch to a broad-based consumption tax that everyone can understand and everyone is behind. That's not the system we have today. Everyone hates the system today, and it punishes the successful. It punishes people that save. In other words, it doesn't provide the incentives to grow. What I'm talking about is increasing the incentives for people to open new businesses and expand existing ones. And you're not going to be able to do that until you reduce the uncertainty that we have today, largely being generated by Congress in three fundamental ways: running these massive deficits, increasing taxes, not lowering them, increasing taxes, both the rates as well as the number, and then piling regulation upon regulation. That's a formula for failure. That's why the American people are waking up to the fact and saying, we're going in the wrong direction, and neither political party is up to the job. That's what we're talking about. Now, I don't want to paint with a too broader brush. There are some good people, both in the House and the Senate, and maybe even in both parties, but they're few and far between. Maybe, at the most optimistic number, maybe 25% of the Republicans would support this. Most of them, especially in the leadership, will fight you any way they can. They will. Why? Not hard to understand. They get their campaign contributions from the very people that get the subsidies, benefit from the tax breaks, credits, deductions, whole slew of ways to benefit or game the system, as well as the regulations. All of that has to be eliminated, and the leadership of both parties will fight it, as will the people that work on K Street, the lobbyists for the various industries and interests. They have a vested interest in the status quo, and the status quo is taking us down the road to serfdom. It's not taking us at all, on the road to peace and prosperity. You see, if we downsize, and a better word is permanently close federal departments, change the tax system to one that is both fair, efficient, transparent, one that's really for this century, not last century, and we finally deal with the problem of out-of-control spending. And the big bucks are in the entitlement and welfare area. See, I would start with discretionary spending by eliminating departments to convince the American people that the federal government is tightening its belt. We have a bloated bureaucracy. We have departments that maybe made sense at one time but don't make sense today. Let me give you an example. You ask the average American, what departments do you interact with? They will say the IRS, the Department of State when they need to get a passport, and if they're in the military, they interact with the Department of Defense. If they're a veteran, with the Veterans Administration. But those are really the departments that they have most interaction with. And that's across the board. Do they deal with the Department of Transportation? Not directly. Or agriculture? No. You see, you're always going to have people that will go to the government hat in hand and try to get subsidies or changes in the tax code or regulations or changes in other regulations to benefit them. We need to eliminate that because most people will not miss, for example, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, will not miss the Department of Energy, the Department of Commerce. You see, the American people, the private sector, they build houses and apartments and office buildings and retail. And the energy industry provides us with our energy. Why do we need a Department of Housing and Urban Development? Why do we need a Department of Energy? Why do we need a Department of Education? Education fundamentally happens locally at the individual level. Federal government, for all practical purposes, shouldn't be involved. Eliminate it. But the same thing goes with agriculture. At one time, about 90% of the American people were involved in the agricultural sector. Today, it's less than 3%. And a lot of that is subsidies. All of those subsidies will be eliminated. And what you need to understand, with the exception of a few crops, most of the other agriculture crops that are produced each year don't involve subsidies. It's only a small portion, but they need to be eliminated. And you're going to have farmers and their lobbyists yelling about it. But those days have to end. Everyone is going to tighten their belt. And that means you're going to have to eliminate complete departments. When I mean eliminate, shut them down. And all the people there will not be employed there anymore. They're either going to have to retire or find a job in the private sector. And yeah, there are going to be a few programs of every department that you probably want to keep. But who's in the best judgment to do that? Now, I would say our representatives, but they have shown no inclination at all to do this. Oh, there are a few, but there are a few that are far between. And I'll tell you this, none of what I've outlined in this three-part program is going to happen with either the Democrat or Republican Party. They have clearly demonstrated over the last 15 years that they're not up to the job. As a matter of fact, they want to go in the opposite direction, the wrong direction. In other words, further down that road to serfdom. They don't want to go down the road to peace and prosperity because that means they might lose their jobs. And that's largely what they're about. It's a professional careerist. They want to stay in power, and to stay in power, they need campaign contributions. So they do the bidding of the people that knock on their doors and want the subsidies, want the regulations, want the tax changes. So you get the government you vote in. So if you continue to vote Democratic or Republican, nothing's going to change. You can complain all you want, but nothing is going to change because both parties are for big government. That's the problem. That's why every year it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger on any metric you want to look at. Don't play the game with a percentage of GDP because GDP has gone big. Now, how long is this going to take? First of all, you're going to need a viable third party. In other words, the independents that are now about 40%, once they start getting over 50%, it makes sense to start a new third party that is based on certain principles such as fiscal responsibility. In other words, not every year, year in, year out, deficit after deficit of deficit. And we're talking huge deficits, huge deficits. And it started under Bush and it continues. It's gotten worse. It's gotten worse under Obama. Well, I have to wrap it up. I'll hopefully post this by tomorrow evening. Thank you for listening. And now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.